The judiciary, finally together, 237 for the record, we have Representative Murkowski, Green, Bogbert, Dula, myself. First order of business is to take up the rescinding motion on House Bill 292, which this committee passed out and brought to our attention. There are a few flaws. Our legal folks do not generally review the governor's bills. However, in this particular case, since we did go back to them for a CS, they brought a couple of items to our attention. We have looked over those, and in fact, Mr. Luckup is correct. And we've talked with Annie Carbonetti, and she's also in agreement that this is an oversight. We could have done it either in rules or here, and I opted to do it here. So I would ask that we rescind our motion in passing out.
Mr. Chairman.
CS for House Bill 292.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roper.
I move that we rescind our action in passing out House Bill 292 as amended in judiciary with the individual recommendations in the attached notes.
Is your objection to that? Seeing none, then we have the bill back before us. And I would entertain a motion that would amend the bill to conform to the legal
DCS
services.
DCS?
Mm-hmm. It is a DCS.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roper.
I move that we adopt as a committee substitute for House Bill 292 Judiciary, the 1GH2014/D version.
Is your objection to that? Seeing none. That bill is before us.
Reference to a non-existing statute?
Yes. Okay, which will of the committee?
Oh. I've already signed
the bill.
Move the bill. All right. Now we can move the bill forward with the
Mr. Chairman, amended. Are you making the motion?
I'll let you do
that. That was the motion. Representative Petula moved that we move House Bill 292 out of committee with individual recommendations as version B, with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note. With your objection, seeing or hearing none, now we have completed our work on
Mr. Chairman,
92.
Can I ask for confirmation of an observation? Is Representative Bogbert trying to grease the skids for his bill later in this meeting?
Oh, no. I'm just hurrying it up. I know everybody has.
I do.
Point is 9 o'clock tonight. I've got dinner at 8, so.
Good job. No way.
You got it.
Which brings us now to the continuation hearing on House Bill 211. We do have Mr. Bob Lohr on the line to answer questions. He's from the Division of Insurance. And that's the only ones we have on the line. And I guess at this point we'll look to the subcommittee for their report back to the full committee on what actions were taken on the previous version, I believe, which was N.
It is. It was taken on N. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did meet, and we have some good news, and we have some bad news.
Let's have the good news first.
The good news was that they allowed the legislators to go about their business, and two of the committee assistants met with members of both the doctors groups and the insurance group and ironed out all differences, with the exception, of course, of medical necessity and the liability provision. And there has been a redraft suggestion for a committee substitute, which is the S version, and we have highlighted the changes from the N version for your edification. I can run through those very quickly if we get hung up. We have the people who actually witnessed the discussion available. But my overview would be that there was agreement between the two factions, and because of that, I see nothing that adversely affects the state. I think they've done a great job, at least as far as everything but those two points that I mentioned to you. And individual members can run through where the highlighted portions are. And again, this is to the N version. If there are any questions, rather than to take the time, because I know I'm short, and I have a hunch that other people have got other things to do. So if there are questions, I'll either try to answer them, or Janet or Kevin will be able to.
One thing that I might add, Mr. Chair, you will note that in this / S version, there is no reference to medical necessity, and there is no reference to the liability provisions. We just kind of left that, those as a whole. So they are not, they have not been incorporated anywhere else in the draft.
Okay, so it's in my understanding then that all the issues have been resolved with the exception of those two, which evidently you couldn't bring about consensus in the time available.
That's right.
So you brought the bill back before this committee to address those policy issues.
Well, what we found when we reconvened and went through the other changes, that we did go through some more debate on those two issues, and we didn't see any movement on either side. They both have good reasons for why they feel the way they do. At one time, we thought we would put it in as a zero as far as medical necessity, leave it out. And so it finally got to the fact that if we don't prejudice this committee with either of those, we just left it completely out, and we could take them back up as a full committee rather than to try and give a subcommittee prejudice on either one of those. They're pretty contentious issues apparently between the two parties.
Okay, Representative Kutula.
Just a question. I think maybe Representative Roekberg was planning on clearing it up later, but we did get a letter from Mr. Bergen expressing some concern about not having been heard, and I just wondered if the issues that were left out are mostly the ones that he's concerned about, or if you had a chance to look at that.
If I could.
He, I think, is ready to deal with that.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to bring that up after we completed this initial adoption.
Whenever.
I will bring that up, okay. Right. So if you would hold that in advance, I'd be happy to speak to it.
Let's move then to adopt the S version and use it as a working draft, and thank the subcommittee for their work in getting us to this point.
Mr. Speaker, I would move that we adopt as our working draft ILS 0472/S, Ford, dated 4500, as I've already said that, our working draft.
That's the motion to adopt the version S version of 211. Is there objection? Representative Roekberg is objecting?
No, I'm not.
Okay. And then, with no objection, we have version S before us, and we have been joined by Representative Croft.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roekberg.
Point of information on the S version. If I could direct the committee's attention to page 5, lines 18 through 23. There was a discussion in the subcommittee, and we left this as what I call a condition subsequent. It related to whether the director of insurance had the authority under the statute 21.390.20(b)(2) in order to, if there was any complaints about the Hospital Medical Service Corporations, which were required to file their rates with the commissioner, other health insurance, which is all the other health insurance companies, are not required to file. There's a statutory requirement that I just cited that allowed the commissioner to come in and review things if it's necessary. We have a letter here dated April 6, 2000, from the Attorney General's office speaking to that issue, that our request, that I think ultimately says that while there is the ability, possibly, that there's no express authority within to routinely review those rates. So at the given that early indication, we had the committee substitute drafted it on page 5 to go back to the old language that retained that the director of insurance, at the director's request, could require the managed care entity provide actuarial demonstration of the increased cost to the director at the director's request. This is the point of service offer provision. So that took care of that one contingency. And that's, there is a letter here to back it up, and that's that point. I think that's clear, and I hope there's no questions on that. Because we went back to the default provision that we had there. And that's what that letter on that one is.
Okay.
Also, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'm going to thank the members of the subcommittee that really did a Herculean job, gave up of their time into the night. I hope you got a decent dinner that night, Jonathan. And we met twice, and then we had two work sessions. And there was a lot of effort, and I'm really pleased with the product that we've come up with, whatever its limitations. I think it's a matter of reality and what can be achieved. I want to thank the members of the insurance industry representing a number of different groups for participating, and the medical association and their personnel and those people. And then there was other people that variously observed the process, organized labor, had representatives from time to time at the whole process over the course of the last 2 weeks. And Mr. Chairman, as has been pointed out, we left the two primary issues, the medical necessity issue and the liability issue, open. And quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I'm open to whatever the committee wishes to do on these issues, but I'm not real optimistic that we can really come to grips with them in such a manner that would satisfy everybody. However, Mr. Chairman, the other issue that Representative Cartula brought up, that we were in receipt of a letter from the Brady Company signed by Ed Bergeron, and let's see, you should have copies.
Copies have been made available to all committee members, right, dated today, 6th of April.
Right, there's the April 3rd letter, which I think is the most important, and there's another one from today. And I'm curious, Mr. Chairman, I want to refer the committee to the April 3rd letter, where it indicates Mr. Bergeron was available on Friday, March 31st, to testify before the committee when we took the bill up, but didn't get a chance to testify, which is rather distressing. Okay. However, Mr. Chairman, I would put on the record that Mr. Bergeron has been fighting this bill and been non-responsive to our request for information from him from the get-go. And he's come in and accused the committee of not giving him a voice and claiming to represent various different groups. And so I really take a personal and institutional exception to his statements. He also indicates in his subsequent letter here, where is it? The letter of the 6th of April, that didn't take up any of his recommendations, and indicated that we were just casting aspersions upon how this committee operates in terms of putting together public policy. I also take strong exception to that language. I think the gentleman's attitude has been one of negativity, and he has not contributed a whit to this discussion other than the letter we received on the 3rd of April. And I really take offense at that. Albeit, I think there are some points in the 3rd of April letter that we were always going to bring before the subcommittee, but we ran out of gas the other night just after we received it, and I thought I'd bring it to the committee's attention, which I think some of those issues are appropriate.
Yes.
My turn.
Well, the third one, right?
This one's mine.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Roper, do you have a letter dated 3 April from Mr. Merton?
Yes, April 3.
I don't.
I know, we got too much paper.
Have a copy of that either.
We just made some more copies of that one, didn't we?
Well, we got 6, but we don't have the 3rd.
Oh.
Why don't we take a brief at ease while the committee secretary is. Mr. Roper, do you want to cover some of the issues that are detailed in Mr. Bergen's 3 April letter.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we mentioned there, apparently we adjourned the testimony and sent it to a subcommittee at that time, but you indicated there was no indication that he was available to testify that we were aware of. And going on, Mr. Chairman, there is a few points I wanted to, I believe he makes four or five salient points here. The first of which is on the first page that relates to the mitigating conflicts with ERISA, and makes a suggestion of incorporating language that indicates that this would not affect anything, any provisions of the plans covered or supersede provisions of the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, which is ERISA. Well, I find this really disingenuous, because these people are complaining about the bill are not covered by the bill because they are ERISA. Unless there's federal law or there's state cases or case law that says that the qualitative elements of any healthcare legislation can be applied to them. This is really convoluted. So they want to make sure of that by putting this in the bill to make sure they're exempt. And I find this absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible on the face of it. So just so you understand what that request is.
Does it matter, Mr. Chairman? I mean,
yes, it does matter, because I think those people, where it's appropriate on quality care issues, should be held to the same standard.
Well, we can't supersede ERISA if we wanted
to.
Right.
But if there were,
if we're in conflict with it, we'd be in conflict with it and supersede it.
And
so infringe upon is the only one that works here?
No, there's case law saying that the states are able to stick their nose under the tent on qualitative, on quantitative issues. And there may be provisions in the federal law that would allow the state to do that specifically. This has to do with the primacy of the state in terms of regulating its own insurance industry, which is very important. I mean, so there's reasons for that, and I would agree. I would call it encroaching on ERISA. I'd admit to that. But that's going to be a matter of case law. It's nothing we can do here, I don't think, that, you know, legislatively to force that issue. But they want protection against that in case.
And Mr. Chairman, we're back on the road. Do you mind if we're informal on this so that we can?
Can you carry on the discussion informally? You want
no,
or just state your name.
Okay.
Before you start, or would that help?
Or just don't overtalk.
Yeah.
Don't overtalk.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. So I think the secretary can distinguish
better
between the two of you. Try to keep comments.
It might be quicker if I just go through the points, and then if we want to discuss something, then we can come back. The second point is that Mr. Bergen objected to the 3 levels of appeal on the internal and external review, on utilization review. I'm not sure he entirely understands that, because the way we have it structured, there's 2 internal reviews and then 1 external. And the first internal review is the first phone call. And then there's a medical doctor at that, and that should be okay with them. They just want to say no, and then it jumps to an external appeal. That's what he's saying here. And I don't think that's valid. You know, on the other hand, it might be that there might be a shorthand method that needs to be put in place there, but I don't think so. Because, as I say, the first level is the telephone call. The second level is the actual 72-hour and or 20-day appeal, or 18-day appeal. And the next one is the external review. The third point speaks to medical necessity, and that's why I wanted to bring this up. And I think Mr. Bergen, I tend to agree with what he has to say. It says that there needs to be a definition of medical necessity, but not in statute. It needs to be in the plan, to guide the plan about what is included and what's excluded from the benefits in each particular plan. And each plan is going to vary. You know, so that is that is at odds with what the medical association says. But in from his perspective, representing client groups of organizations that in essence are self-insured groups that contract with panels of providers, it might potentially have catastrophic stop-loss insurance on top. They want to know, they want to go by their definition of medical necessity and what is excluded services. And I tend to agree with them, because this is a discussion we even had in the subcommittee about allowing medical necessity but putting some kind of a fence around it to have a cost containment measure in there. Because in my opinion, the AMA's definition was basically what would be characterized as any willing provider. It was totally unlimited without, although there was language that indicated cost alternatives or containment scoping, it's not entirely required. So anyway, and that's one area I'll agree with him. And the fourth thing was that he was taking exception to the who's included in the definition of a managed care entity. The managed care entity is a central definition in this bill, and but he's objecting to or concerned about the definition of what an employer or an employee health care organization is. I assume his concerns are that the bill throws out a net and takes in the organizations he represents. I would suggest that it does. On the other hand, he does have the ERISA fence around it, but if there was a non-ERISA group, which is what, over 50, Gord? What makes an ERISA group? Anybody over 2 that's self-insured or over 50?
I don't think that's the definition of ERISA. It's just.
Reed, you know, what is it?
Self-insured.
It doesn't matter any number, it's just self-insured. Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
And then the fifth idea was that just casting aspersions at members of my staff. But we won't bring that up. About why we were taking the bill up. Because the doctors asked for it. Well, it's in part true, but my awareness of the entire concept of what patient's bill of rights means and what it's intended to do. Because I've been studying this issue for a long time before anybody crossed the threshold of my office. At any rate, Mr. Chairman, we received this letter on the 3rd. It wasn't really acted on by the committee, and then we had the follow-up letter on the 6th of April, indicating after they did review the S version that because we ignored their recommendations, they still maintained a negative position on the bill. I thought it was very important to take these letters up and have the committee consider whatever they wish to act on them.
Thank you, Representative Roberg, for those comments regarding the letter. Are there questions?
Yeah.
Pose. Were any of these issues addressed in the earlier version? Version K?
Well, the external review, I mean, this has been an ongoing drafting, a year and a half of putting it together, a lot of the people involved. And the medical necessity is clear. I mean, that's on everybody's radar scope. We know what they're talking about there. The ERISA thing, I think I've explained that, unless there's any further questions about that. And the managed care entity, I'm assuming that they'd like to have the words employer or employee healthcare organization removed from it, just so it didn't get them. So. I think the medical necessity argument has some merit in terms of its substance. It's how we get there is the issue. I mean,
Mr.
Chairman.
Representative Croft.
You know, we were getting dangerously close to actually discussing the substantive issues of this bill, and I tried to get Representative Brokberg to stop at each of those points so we could do something about them. But this, I don't think the soliloquy format is particularly helpful. And now we've got to go back through each of those five issues if we want, but now they're sort of melded into one. I mean, we've gotten all the agreement that I think we're going to get on some of the boilerplate language. The large issues that remain are what we need this committee to, as quickly as possible, decide whether medical necessity is in the statute or out, and whether liability is in statute or out. And there, and I'd appreciate addressing the hose. I mean, in particular, we're the insurance plan determines the coverage, what conditions are covered. The question we have to struggle with is whether and on what considerations the treatment for that covered condition can be determined by the insurance company or by the doctors. Can you go beyond even some of the exclusions for a covered condition that is a medically necessary treatment? And there's just no way to wordsmith that. You've got to decide whether even a thing the plan, if the plan covers the condition, nobody questions their right to distinguish on conditions as long as statutory provisions don't mandate it. But once it's a covered condition, can you second-guess treatments or ask for less expensive treatments, or is it the doctor's determination? And I think we've gone as much that we ought to concentrate on the public policy issues one by one, not omnibus all five, and resolve.
Thank you, Representative Croft, for those comments, and that's exactly what I intend to do, because there was at least some concern as to whether or not Mr. Bergen had an opportunity or didn't get an opportunity to testify. That last hearing, I thought, at least in all sense of fairness, that we at least address his points, the salient points that he's making in the letter. I'm sure that's probably what he would have won over. So I just appreciate the comments that he's forwarded to the committee. Consideration, but clearly the two policy issues are the major ones that are out there. It's up to us to determine what direction we want to take with those two particular issues. So let's begin this arduous task and determine whether or not we want to include, let's start with. Let's start with the latter, medical necessity. Is it the will of the committee that we want to leave medical necessity undefined in this particular piece of legislation, or do we want to define it using what was provided in the AMA's version K, which I, in my opinion, I thought was unconstrained. It was too broad. Or maybe something that was provided by this committee, to this committee, from the state of Washington or one of the Carolinas, I forget if it was north or south. That's, I think, a starting point, or do nothing, leave it out. Representative Murkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the subcommittee, we did not focus much attention on the liability aspect. We had recognized that we'd reached an impasse on medical necessity, and rather than spend a lot of time reaching impasse on liability, we didn't hear much from either side on it. The one thing that we did hear from insurance company's perspective was the argument that with the federal legislation in conference committee now, and a statement, I think, by Mr. Evans and perhaps by the gentleman from Blue Cross, that in fact they are expecting a liability provision to come out of that legislation, that we might be prudent to hold off on adopting a liability provision at this point in time and revisiting this issue next year when we would know what the federal legislation says on that particular issue. So we did not take the Section 2 and dissect that for whatever it's worth. So you know what the committee did with the liability issue.
Skirted around that one. Representative Rugberg.
We did have a discussion about it, Mr. Chairman. Included comments about the fact that under common law or law under the state of Alaska, that cause of action that arises against a provider can, you know, a person is not restricted from filing a lawsuit. What the Section 2 language is, or what the liability language in the K version does, is actually create a new cause of action. It created a special duty that would raise the bar, if you will, and I think make it somewhat easier to define what the cause of action is if there was a failure to provide, or the theory being is that the plan itself, if they were making medical decisions, then they should be held responsible for it. That is to say, if they were denied coverage and there was an issue about that, then that would give rise to a cause of action. Or there may be some difficulty under tort law drafting that pleading without the statutory cause of action. So, but I don't think any patient or anybody is necessarily going to be deprived of their right to sue by not having a liability section. I think the liability section just made it easier to sue. And I'd like to have, if that's correct analysis, or it isn't, I'd like to have some corroboration one way or the other.
They moved on you to liability, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to stay on liability or go back to...
I started on liability.
I thought you were going to start on... I thought you'd started on the... medical necessity. You started on liability?
Eric's right, but Lisa did a nice shift.
Proverbial shift.
He said ladder.
I'll go wherever you like.
Medical necessity.
But you said ladder, and that was the ladder issue, and she started on the ladder issue.
Thank you. I knew there was some reason.
All right.
Which would you like to discuss?
Let's go to, since we've been discussing liability, then we'll start with the liability in Section 2, Version K, which is where the language is contained that I think is so eloquently explained by Representative Rokeberg. Representative Croft.
Eloquently but incorrectly, Mr. Chairman. managed care entity is civilly liable for damage for harm to a covered person proximately caused by its failure to exercise ordinary care, or a health treatment decision that constitutes a failure to exercise ordinary care. Now that is codifying the standard that everyone operates in everything of you've got to use reasonable care to people you owe a duty to, and you clearly owe a duty to these people, either that you're caring for them under the plan. Well, what you said was it doesn't change anything, but it slightly changed something, so we shouldn't do it. It, I believe, clarifies that there is a duty here, and to the and so we need to know whether that is clear now or not. My impression of the state of the law is that it's not, and so it clarifies that they must act with ordinary care towards these people, and I think they should. I don't know all the different cases out there and why there's such a problem doing what is normally the standard tort duty that I have walking down the street to somebody that that's an insured under your contract provision. So if we can't articulate, if they're not being held to the standard, they should. And if they are being, then it doesn't do anything more than clarify it. I'd be interested in arguments why somebody should not be civilly liable for damages for harm to a covered person proximately caused by the failure to exercise ordinary care. If I drive like this, and drive in a manner that doesn't meet that standard, I'm liable. So I don't understand why they wouldn't be. If they are, fine. If they're not, we ought to clarify that they, in fact, should be. So I would move that we adopt Section 2 from Version K into the S version wherever it's appropriate.
I'll object, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so the amendment is to adopt the language in version K as amendment number one into version S, wherever appropriate. Is that the amendment you're offering?
Yeah, the liability, which is section 2 from K, be put into S wherever appropriate.
Okay. Representative Roper, you have lodged an objection.
The insureds have we heard some of the reasons why they prefer not to have it in here. I think they claim that this is a cost driver. It establishes a new cause of action, which it does. I'm not sure I understand the distinction. Of course, I'm not an attorney, nor have I ever practiced any personal injury law but I think, as I said, it does create a new cause of action. It makes it much easier. But what we get down to eventually, what the judge would do, it would get back to the same thing we're discussing here. The ordinary care standard would have to be placed besides and next to medical necessity to determine whether ordinary care was done, and they're all wrapped together. You cannot say, a judge couldn't say that the provider wasn't or was providing the ordinary standard of care without being able to define what medical necessity was, because that would be the argument. So it's all circular. So it all fits together here. So you can't have one without the other. Isn't there a song lyric about that?
Lion King is what I was singing, but I don't know what you were saying.
It's close.
Representative Curtula.
Could anybody give me an example of how it would be approached now? Because I would have thought that you'd have standard of being medical care, and I understand what you're saying about medical necessity, but just an example.
If there was somebody suffered damages by them being denied the experimental drug, then you could file a cause of action saying, well, they should have done it or they shouldn't have.
And wouldn't it be the same as
I think you can still do that now, but then it becomes the moving target. You know, there's no statutory medical necessity.
Through the chair, I think that's what I'm trying to understand. I mean, is it just a codification of what the law is now? Ignoring medical necessity, it looks like it is. And I'm sorry I didn't see the subcommittee, but that's what I want to understand.
It has to result.
Representative McCall.
Thank you. From the failure to provide care or treatment covered by the health care plan. So if your experimental drug is not covered by the health care plan, then you're not there.
Bad example.
So is it true, though, that this is the standard now as we understand it in the common law and case law?
Well, that's the issue. I mean, do you allow the plan the right to define what medical necessity or to list exclusions in the plan? And this is this whole area. I mean, this is the debate that's been going on for decades.
But if we leave that out, if we leave out medical necessity, if we're just looking at duty to exercise ordinary care, proximately causing, you know, by the failure, isn't that what we would have without codifying it? Isn't it the same or not? That's what
I think they're so intertwined you can't separate one from the other.
Representative Croft.
You know, I think the issue comes back to the ERISA one. And right now, non-ERISA plans are covered by the ordinary standard of care, just like we are driving down the street. The question is whether ERISA plans are or not. Normally, we can't substantively touch ERISA plans, but by this provision, it's one of those that we can sneak under. So that's how it can be both a do nothing besides codify the general standard that everyone lives under and a cost driver. I mean, that was frustrating me for a while. How can it do nothing yet increase costs? Because it is not clear now whether ERISA plans are covered And there is at least a good argument that we have the ability to do that under ERISA, limited ability. And we would be saying even ERISA plans must have the same standard of care that I do driving down the street, that I not proximately cause by my negligence, failure to use reasonable care, harm to somebody else. I don't know why they wouldn't have that responsibility generally. And the law does say, as Representative Murkowski pointed out, the amendment, I guess, says, this section does not cover an obligation on the part of the managed care entity to provide to a covered person, to a person, care or treatment that is not covered by the health care plan. I assume if we put, in Representative Roekberg's right, there is a tie it back into medical necessity, because it would also be a failure to use ordinary care if you violated the law, which then we would put in the law, you must cover medical necessity.
Even if it wasn't there, that would be the contractual right, because it's always
out of order.
I am out of order, I'm sorry.
I had to listen to your soliloquy. The question becomes, is this the appropriate standard? It does tie it back to a covered care or treatment, and it establishes what is, I think, current liability by everybody in the non-ERISA world, but it puts into the ERISA world as well. So that may be where it can be both the general standard and some cost worry to the ERISA plans. Does that make sense, Representative Roekberg?
I think so. I'm not exactly sure you're correct on that, but I think you are about the distinction between ERISA and non-ERISA. I think you are, but I can't absolutely remember correctly on that.
Further discussion? Amendment number one. Question real quick.
I think we would, by putting that in there, we would definitely upset the, let's call it the Brady Company crew more, and as well as the insurers. So then we got two against one on that one.
It doesn't go that way.
It doesn't go that way? Well, it does too. Just to remind you, the political reality of it.
Further discussion? You still maintaining your objection, Representative Roper?
I do.
All right. First policy question is before us. To do or not to do?
Mr. Chairman.
Amendment number one.
I'd just like to make a brief comment.
Representative Roper.
I'm voting this way only because I'd like to see a bill passed this year. It does. My vote doesn't necessarily believe one way or the other on the matter.
Wait a minute.
Can I make a disclaimer like that?
You're voting on an amendment just to vote to make sure the bill passes? Is this what I'm hearing?
My vote has nothing to do with the
merits. My vote has nothing to do with the merits of the amendment.
Put that on the record.
Anybody else like to put the same on the record?
I may use that one again. My ditto comment.
Sure you will. Okay.
Representative Roekberg.
No.
Here. Representative Murkowski.
I'm going to pass, yeah.
Okay. Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Fritula.
Yes.
Not here. Chairman Cott.
No.
And Representative Murkowski.
No.
So amendment one fails, which brings us to the second major issue.
Just to move things along, Mr. Chairman, the hold on one second.
Which topic do you want to take up now, Mr. Chairman?
I believe we need to take up the second major topic that was dealt with or was not dealt with, depending on how you view it.
Sir, I think I have the ultimate
medical necessity.
My table.
Number one failed to pass, which was the right one.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roekberg.
Mr. Chairman, I have the committee had distributed to them the N2 amendment last time.
N2?
Can you just copy that?
Yeah.
And distribute it now?
I have some more here if you don't have one. Here, if you want to hold those out. What this is, Mr. Chairman, is the AMA language with the proviso that unless the plan sets out a different definition, it provides that the plan can define what medical necessity is. It's the only trouble I have with this right now, I'd actually like to amend the amendment to put a little, there's some language in the, where is that one? I think it's North Carolina, North Dakota.
Yeah. South?
Let's see, did you hear me?
South Carolina? The one that was.
It says, the definition is not precluded in entity from establishing a definition of medical necessity of care for determining which services are covered by the plan. That's just redundant because it's a lot. Plan sets out a different definition. Now, this would, what would this amendment would do would be require that they define in their contract exactly what the hell they meant by medical necessity, or they'd be defaulted into this position.
So, Representative Roper, we're having the.
I'm not sure this is going to make everybody happy.
Representative Koch.
Doesn't make me happy. It seems to me to do exactly what leaving it out would do, or that is to accomplish exactly nothing. I mean, either your plan has a definition in it or it doesn't. It would be pretty silly not to. And to say it means this unless you mean something different avoids the central question that we've been trying to get to a vote at some point, which is even if the plan covers a condition, but they're trying to give you a treatment that your doctor or you think is insufficient for that covered condition, can you go beyond the scope of the contract to say, this is medically necessary. You want to treat me with drugs. I say surgery is what I need. You're telling me no. And I think for this covered condition, I should, despite the terms of the contract, because it's medically necessary, get this form of treatment. Now, people can have reasonable opinions on either side of this, but this is neither here nor there. And it worries me that we've been trying in a lot of areas. We did a lot of good work on the subcommittee to try and get agreement where we could on the technical issues. Even some of them had substance and the sides gave on this, but they were the smaller matters. We deserve, people deserve really, that we make some kind of clear decision in this area. And this is not a decision. It's still trying to wordsmith it. And so I'd move to amend the amendment to delete unless the plan sets out a different definition.
The text's going to change.
Okay, we'll take a brief of these.
So,
Commissioner Roper.
Mr. Chairman, there's testimony in the subcommittee, and the committee needs to be aware of it, is that the external review process, which has mandatory conditions that will be undertaken and then discretionary conditions, and most of these can be found on page 8 and 9, particularly in 9 I like to go to, just to give an example, that's page 9, line 2, the external appeal agency shall include among the evidence to be taken into consideration A through D, and then 4 on line 12, sub 4 of the external panel agency may also take into consideration the following, it's A through I on the next page. These are basically what defines medical necessity. You know, that is what medical necessity is here, but there's a distinction made between the mandated shall and the discretionary may, depending on the circumstances. And that's one of the problems here in trying to come up with a statutory definition of medical necessity. Each contract is going to be somewhat different because the pricing and the underwriting is going to be different. So, you know, that is one of the major problems with drafting a statutory definition. You can't, how can you'd have to underwrite to the plain vanilla definition every time you made up a healthcare plan. You couldn't have a menu of services on the plan unless you redefined medical necessity at every step. That's what a menu is all about. That's what patient choice is all about. That's how you drive costs down if you can contain some of those costs. And that's where the rub is. That's why if you read Ms. Calamariti's really quite interesting letter, this is an argument between the insurance companies and the docs. When you get right down to it, and the patients are caught in the middle. It's our responsibility, and I certainly look at it as my responsibility, to protect the patients here. But we have to, you know, but we have a dual goal here. It's affordability and quality of care. I mean, this balance is an ongoing balance, so it's not a real simple answer. I mean, we could even come up with a referencing definition of medical necessity that references our external review procedures to give the court direction if you want to do something like that. But even in that, sub D on 3 on page 9, on line 11 says, external agency shall, among the evidence taken into consideration, the group medical care plan. And so if there's exclusions there, they have to take that into consideration.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cross.
I mean, that's an awfully slim read to pull in this idea of medical necessity. On page 8, it says an external appeal process must include at least the following: a fair denominator determination based on coverage provided by the plan and by applying terms as defined in the plan. However, nothing in this paragraph may be construed as providing coverage which are excluded. That's clearly limited to the plan. And 2 says external shall determine based on the medical needs. That looks good, but it says and in accordance with the scope of the covered benefits and the plan. So I think that you have narrowed in S, and that I think was our conscious choice. We were presenting one that did not have a beyond the scope of the contracts determination. This was, if you will, with medical necessity beyond the scope of the contract, out. It is out in what it directs that the external appeal process do. And I don't believe that H may take into consideration evidence of the community standard gets you back with authority to go beyond the scope of the plan. I mean, I think what we're dealing with here, and it can be a rational public policy choice for Representative Roekberg to make, to say stay within the plan. He made a good defense of it there, but let's be clear about the choice we have here. This S version says only those covered by the plan and only those treatments covered by the plan, even if you have a good argument that you could make that the treatment you were denied was medically necessary for your covered condition, you would not get it because it said somewhere in there, we don't do tonsillectomies. My tonsil's covered and my doctor says I need this, but it said somewhere in that long plan, excluded treatments include chemotherapy or whatever. So it's all right. I'm not criticizing his policy decision, but don't mischaracterize what S does. S says limit to the plan. And what we've moved here, the amendment we're trying to discuss, is whether we do medical necessity that goes beyond the scope of the plan.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roekberg.
On that point. Well, Representative Crawford makes a good distinction about whether it's inside the plan or outside the plan. And that's really basically the crux of the matter. Because if you set the scope of the plan and any inclusionary or exclusionary, however you want to couch it, that sets the underwriting criteria for the plan. And we heard some testimony the other night, there was actually a compromise in Congress. If you stepped outside the scope of the plan, then they gave up something else. I can't recall what it was. But at any rate, to me, it only makes sense that you'd be able to have a underwriting fence around it in order to have an actuarially sound basis for rating it. If the external appeal agency could
decide to go outside, step outside the scope of the plan, they'd have to have a basis for it, and the basis would have to be in the statute here. So the discretionary things, I think, give them some wiggle room. But I agree with what Representative Croft said. That's what this bill says. You have to stay within the plan, right? And I think the AMA definition of medical necessity is any willing provider, we believe this is necessary, and we don't care what it costs. And I think that's the right attitude, basically, for a doctor to have in terms of what the best care for the patient is. Although, on the other hand, I think they ought to take those costs into consideration, depending on what the type of malady it is. I think there's a issue there. Yeah. So, and I don't want to turn 65 or whatever my age will be, so I can't even go out and buy the health care I want. Is that right, Gordon? At any rate, I'm digressing.
Representative Petula.
I think I'm understanding. The bottom line is whatever we say is medical necessity is going to be the baseline if we adopt that definition. That's the bottom. And, I mean, plans can add or detract whatever they want to do, but if we go to medical necessity, that's at least going to be required, and we'll understand that, and everybody will understand that as a baseline. Got it? I mean, is that right? If we go
I think it depends on what definition of medical necessity come up with. You use the AMA, anything goes. There's no limit on what could be charged.
But if we define it, that's going to be the standard that's going to be used across the board for everybody if we go outside the plan, right?
Right, if we define it in the statute.
Okay, that's what I wanted
to share. Yeah, I'd like to just back up a little bit on that. I mean, I think there is some language in the AMA that speaks to certain levels, but it doesn't mandate it. It's almost entirely discretionary. You know, and I can understand that. You know, doctors think of themselves as scientists, but also as artists, too. I mean, it's the art of the possible. You know, so.
Like politicians.
Maybe like politicians, right. So, I mean, this is why this thing hasn't been satisfactorily resolved in any jurisdiction in this country. And for us to come in here and think that and we can solve it, like, even if we had something good to plagiarize, I'd be the first one to jump on top of it, which I don't know if it is resolvable.
Such words from a sponsor give me scant comfort.
You objected to that amendment.
Well, I objected, and then I moved an amendment to the amendment to strike out the thing that guts it, unless the plan sets out a different definition. So I think we've got amendment number 2 with a proposed amendment to fix
okay.
it. But in the
all right, sorry. Representative Roachberg moved the amendment to deal with this particular issue. Mm-hmm. And Representative Croft, you are moving an amendment to the amendment that
on lines 3 and 4, deletes the phrase unless the plan sets out a different definition. I guess. Yeah, you're right. That really deletes a provision that defines all the way down to definition. So it would start medical necessity shall be defined as.
Okay, so you're deleting lines 3 and up to the word definition on line 4.
Mm-hmm. In through definition.
Through definition.
I guess
definition.
You still need little 1. I'm not sure where you
still need the little 1.
Well, are you whacking my definition? Mm-hmm. So we're striking
out a provision that defines medical necessity unless the plan sets out a different definition.
Oh, okay.
That's.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have to go to the Senate Finance to. House Finance, I guess.
Do you have to depart? Would we want us to hold the bill over and talk about it?
No, I mean, you could act on this You can trust us.
Well, yeah, if you add anything to it, the bill's dead, so I might as well try to go up and salvage another.
Well, there's an amendment to your amendment.
I know, that's what I mean.
Did you object to the amendment?
Yes, I did. I did object.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Question.
Question. It's been called. Is there further debate? I guess not. There's an objection. Madam Secretary.
Okay. Representative Murkowski.
Yes.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Kurtulla.
Yes.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Brokberg.
No.
Chairman Cott.
Yes, so the amendment to the amendment passes. It brings us back before us, the amendment number two. Is there further debate on amendment number two?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Croft.
This is essentially the AMA definition. Now,
how are you going to get lower insurance rates now? You figure it out.
He's a bitter, bitter man. It does seem to me still that the Washington language that we've discussed in subcommittee, it has more sideboards and would be less objectionable and more likely to kill, less likely to kill the bill. That would be more likely to be, since it's something that Washington insurers are somewhat grudgingly living under in Washington, and that's where a lot of our companies operate in both Washington and Alaska. I would actually, though it's somewhat weaker, prefer the Washington language. And I had to amend Roekberg's because I didn't want it standing. But, you know, if we could table this one and move the Washington, I think we'd be doing a better service to it. I do feel like there has to be some definition of medical necessity outside of the contract to make sure that medically necessary things are provided. I'd rather have this than nothing, but I'd rather have Washington.
How much of Washington? The whole thing?
The whole thing. If you delete that last sentence, I think you just took out the heart of the matter again. I guess what I would do then, in the procedural context, so we could move on, maybe even now quickly with our workload, is move to table amendment number two, and I'll bring up amendment number three, and we can always bring amendment number two off the table if that doesn't pass.
Okay. The motion right now is to table, lay aside amendment number two. Is there objection to doing that? Seeing none, then number two is set aside. Representative Croft.
I'd move as amendment number three, the language that we've been distributed as the Washington language that starts the medical reviewers from a certified independent review organization will make determinations. Now, there may be need, and it says Washington has to say Alaska, mm-hmm. And there may be conforming amendments that will have to be made to make it fit the language of this bill. What I like about the Washington language over even the AMA, the last sentence, medical reviewers may override the health plan's medical necessity or appropriateness standards if the standards are determined upon review to be unreasonable or inconsistent with sound evidence-based medical practice. It almost sets up, you almost start with the provision language rather than the language plus medical necessity, and then you give the ability to break outside of it, but it is the burden of proof on you to prove that it's unreasonable and need to step out.
And
Representative Green.
And doesn't that, in a way, kind of soothe the opening wound that we've created with Representative Roekberg? Part of the objection he made, that last sentence kind of helps it back in.
Yeah, I don't. Yes, Mr. Chairman, it does for me anyway. I don't know whether it does for Representative Roekberg or the insurance carriers. It seems Right. I know that they do not want any outside of the contract. You're just at the fundamental level where they don't want to go outside the contract. It is language that is in at least another jurisdiction, and it is language that does seem to have you say you start with the plan and you have the burden of proving why you need to go outside of it, rather than you start with the plan plus a statutorily defined medical necessity. So it's at least more comforting to me, though probably not for them.
All right, so then the amendment number three would be parentheses five in its entirety with the exception of one word change that I see, and there may be some conforming amendments in the bill. Taking out washing and replacing with Alaska in subsection 5 is what we're talking about. So that's amendment number 3. Okay, that's the motion. Is there objection to adopting amendment number 3?
I'm objecting for purposes of discussion, I guess.
Okay, there's an objection for discussion purposes.
Oh, I kind of feel like I need to take up Representative Roekberg's banner. Reluctantly, though. And it is with regard to the last sentence and the override ability. I think that just puts you back. You get put back in that position where you don't have the cap, if you will, or you don't have the sideboards because you've got a review process that's out there, and looking at the standards on unreasonable or inconsistent with sound evidence-based medical practice, you could probably argue those terms all day. I would agree that I like this better than the AMA definition, and I think one of the reasons I like it is because the component in here where it talks about the cost-effectiveness evidence. And I think that that's helpful, and I think that that does do what Representative Green said earlier, soothe some of the ruffled feathers between the doctors and insurance. It's better, but it still doesn't give me the degree of comfort that I would like. I just haven't seen anything that's better than this, unfortunately.
Representative Green.
Could we take just a real brief of these?
Okay, let's take a brief of these. We'll come back to order. Representative Green.
They, their people would look at that and say.
We're back to order now.
So they would just sign off.
Representative Murkowski, you wish to make further comments on your objection on amendment number 3?
Not at this time, no.
In just quick wrap up.
Discussion on amendment number 3? Still objections?
No, I didn't withdraw it. I just stopped talking about
it. Just stopped talking about it? All right. Sam Croft, can you wrap up on amendment number 3?
No, we've had enough discussion about
it. Representative Petula.
Well, maybe I can just put it on the record that I think this is an incredibly difficult issue. I wish I'd been on the subcommittee. I think it's just really hard to try to figure out how to drive any kind of path here, and I wish that it were easier, but it's not, so that's it.
Thank you for those comments. You didn't want to be in the subcommittee, from what I've been told. Madam Secretary.
Representative Murkowski.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Kutula.
Pass.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Chairman Cott.
Yes.
And Representative Kutula.
Yes.
Amendment 3 passes. Is there further amendments? What's wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Do we have to make some kind of conforming amendments throughout now that we've adopted this?
I think
we'll look at that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so, but we'll look at it.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we advance committee substitute for House Bill 211, will be now judiciary with amended, the S version as amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes?
Zero.
Zero fiscal note.
Yeah.
Yeah. State of Alaska. Is there objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the bill is moved. Seeing no further business coming for this committee today, we're moved.
What?